Welcome to another Cut on Load Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
I'm Sean Carlin.
Now, Sean, you're telling me you were watching something on TV
I was watching the news the other day, and something popped up in the sporting segment that I have not, rarely see in
Hemophile.
The media. That would be a real very rare occurrence. But my nephew's had a fair bit of media, actually. Softball.
Softball. Not baseball, but softball. Wow. What was it about?
Well, the exciting thing is that the women's softball team, the Australian women's softball team, were
the Aussie Spirit.
The Aussie Spirit. They're the ones. It was great stuff. They talked to the girls at the airport. They were all saying goodbye to mum and dad. It was so exciting for them. But they're the first team.
Well, first individuals, first athletes.
First athletes, first team to leave Australia. To head over to Japan for their Olympic preparation.
Now, we're talking about they left on May 31.
Yeah.
The Olympics don't start to what? What is it, July 21?
It's a long time. I think they said 53 days they're going to be away from home before they have their first game at the Olympics. But they were saying that they haven't had a chance to really play together since 2019, since they qualified. And I remember, I think we did a story back then, a podcast on when they qualified. So, yeah, I guess that's one of the things you don't think about, but COVID last year obviously put a hold on the Olympics, I guess we're going to see whether that's good and bad, but it obviously stopped a lot of teams having that ability to be able to play together and play other international competition.
They did play some games in February 2020 because I know Georgia Hood and a few of the youngsters went and played in the series, so... But still, that's well over a year since they've played competition softball.
Yeah, so they're going to get over there. And reading one of the articles about them leaving, they're going to have 23 games as part of their preparation, which would include playing the Japanese national team.
For a lot of sports, 23 games is like a full season, and they're going to do that in less than 2 months.
That's right. It's going to be a very hard schedule, and of course they're going to have training on top of that, but then you think of all the other things they're going to have to do, because they are going to be the ones really testing out all these, this bubble. They're going to have to be isolated from everybody. They're going to have to be tested all of the time. Just getting over there, you imagine the flight, and then they would have been sitting around for a long time waiting for, they had to get tested as soon as they arrived, and so they would have to wait for all those results. So those things would be difficult, I imagine, but you got to think the excitement of being in that team and being over there and a chance to compete at the Olympics has got to outweigh that.
Well, they're taking a squad of 23, which has to be trimmed to 15 by the time the Olympics come, and they're three South Australians. There's Belle White, Georgia Hood, and Chelsea Robinson. So SA's got a fairly good representation. There are a couple of issues which bother me a little bit is that with the testing regime, as soon as they find anyone that's got a hint of COVID, boom, they go home.
Well, they're the sort of logistical things that are going to be a bit of a nightmare, aren't they? Because if you're in a bubble and you've got one person with COVID, must you assume?
That they've all got it.
They've all got it. Mm-hmm. And so this is the risk now that everyone has to take. It's going to be a risk throughout the entire Olympic campaign for all countries, because you got to think they're all going to be isolated, but you're going to have all these people coming from all these different countries, athletes, officials, coaches, etc. They're going to have to sign this pledge saying we will do all the right things. But can you just imagine? I mean, you just see those issues where, imagine in some events your competitor comes up with a COVID test. You in that case, it may not be anything to do with you because you're not a close contact, but there could be athletes who miss out on finals, semifinals, etc. But you've got to think, if COVID does raise its ugly head, it's going to be really hard to stop it.
Well, look, I was messaging a friend of mine that is a media person over with the Japanese baseball, and she asked me if I was going to come over, and I said, look, I would have loved to under normal circumstances, but because of the situation with COVID-19, there's no way I could get over there. And then now she is living in Japan. She's living in Tokyo, and she said to me she probably won't go to the games either, which tended to make me think, what's going on? So I did a bit of investigation, and I see the government really wants the Olympics to go ahead, obviously for political and financial reasons, but was it 80-odd% of the people are against the Olympics going ahead. And in fact, there will not really be any people. No one from overseas will come to watch the games. They won't be allowed. So I see that 10,000 of the volunteers have quit, and they're not too concerned because they're saying there's still 30,000 left, and they probably don't need as many volunteers anymore because there won't be the supporters there. But that environment, it makes me think, will they go ahead?
Well, at this stage, yes. I mean, they're certainly pushing ahead, aren't they? And you would think of the logistics that have to be involved now in terms of keeping everybody safe. And even if you think of the number of tests that are going to be done, and so you're going to have all those people involved in that process. But this is what people, you know, the Olympics is massive. Yep. It is a huge industry, and it has great political power, economic power, etc. And you think from Tokyo's point of view, they would have invested massive amounts of dollars, man hours, etc., into the Olympics.
Stadiums, yeah. Et cetera.
And so you can see why. But there is this debate, isn't there? Because ethically, you're thinking, well, is it okay to put athletes at risk? Now, probably from an athlete point of view, I remember years ago, and I don't have a source, so I can't really say it's 100%, but I remember reading this article back from 1984. Where they surveyed athletes at the Olympics and said, if you could take a drug, guarantee you win a gold medal. Have you remember this?
Yep. Would you take it?
But you would die within a period of time.
They said, yes, we'll take it.
There was a very high percentage of athletes that said, yes, they would. Now, I remember at the time I was younger, I think, wow, really? So from an athlete perspective, you think they're prepared to take that risk, but then it's all the other people, isn't it, that are needed to run the event. And so that's it's a big risk. So let's hope, I really hope that it all works out as it should. Everyone's safe. Everyone has a great Olympics and everyone gets through unscathed.
Well, let's look at reality. The fact of the matter is that athletes generally that aim to make an Olympic Games, their focus is solely on that. So anything else doesn't really matter. So their future after the Olympic Games or whatever doesn't really come into consideration. It's the Olympic Games, it's their goal, it's what they've trained for, it's what they want to be, you know, get to. Now, after the Olympic Games, a year after, 10 years after they retired, they'll look back and they would look at it differently. But that bubble of mindset about competing at the highest level, it turns people into do crazy things.
It wouldn't say, well, crazy people, but it's that real, that's when you are very driven. That's it. That is what it becomes your life. It becomes your, you know, every waking breath is what you're thinking about, and that's what your whole purpose. So yeah, I understand all that. And certainly as you know, I'm a much older person now, believe it or not. And, you look back on things and you do have a different attitude and your mindset changes, but it's hard sometimes to go back in time and think what were you really like and what were you really thinking about? But, it's here. The girls have gone. So they are the pioneers, aren't they, in this case? So in many ways, I guess people will be looking to them and how they're operating and how this bubble for them is working and how the testing procedure is working and so on. So good luck to them. And, yeah, it was great to see a different sport getting – and they got some really good media time, which is wonderful. So because, as you would know, I mean, softball doesn't often get a lot of coverage, does it?
No, unfortunately, softball's looked upon as the younger sister of baseball, so to speak. It's almost like secondary to baseball. But you go out and watch a softball game, it's different. And those girls are so good at what they do, it's unbelievable.
The pitching style is different, isn't it? But that ball is still flying. Yes. It still sings along. When was the last time Australia played in the Olympics?
Well, look, they played in the Olympics last time in 2008 at Beijing and got the bronze.
Okay.
They played in 2000.
So that's been, so 2008, would have been 12, but 13 years.
13 years, yeah, I know. Softball and baseball got cut from the Olympics after 2008, but because Japan is a baseball, softball playing nation, they've chosen to bring it back in again. I hope it stays in because they're just, you know, without any bias, I have to admit they're great sports.
Yeah, of course you love them, and I remember too. That's why I asked because I clearly remember watching the girls playing in the medal games, and I thought, wow, this is, I really enjoyed. Again, it's not something that I watch very often, but I did watch it, and the girls did very, very well. So I'd always consider, hey, we're a strong softball country. But so it's great for them to have an opportunity to compete again.
You know, in South Australia, we don't get many opportunities to see an Australian team play here, but 2 years ago, it was stinking hot. It was something like about 40-plus degrees, and they played this Japanese professional team, came over here and played the Australian team at West Beach. They played it pretty early in the morning because the heat was just horrific. But to watch that standard, it was mind-blowing. They are just magnificent athletes, and they've obviously been brought up and trained as young kids to develop the cream of the cream of softballers, and they're well worth the money to go and watch. And I did watch some softball at the 2000 Olympics, and it was a big thrill.
Yeah, well, tell us about the girls, the SA girls, who are in the team, or in the squad at least.
Well, Belle White, she's an experienced Australian player. She plays for Sturt locally. She's played in 5 or 6 premierships for Sturt. She's the veteran of the South Australian girl. She's been around forever, it seems. She was always a catcher, but lately she's been playing shortstop for Sturt and a little bit of first base. So that gives her that utility-type position, I think. I think that she should make the team just for that ability to...
Her flexibility.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. And then we've got young Chelsea Robinson playing for Walkerville. She's a young catcher. And she's got a big future. I'm hopeful that she makes this team. If she doesn't make this team, I'm sure that she will become a regular because she's just got a fantastic attitude, the way she talks to her pitchers, the way she talks to her teammates, the way she blocks home play. Obviously, I see her a lot because she plays here, but I'm very impressed with her. And she just sort of goes about the game with this manner, which is just sportsmanship or sportswomanship, whichever you want to say. Just a lovely girl. And the third girl, Georgia Hood, now she's sensational. She's only just recently turned 20, but she's been around the A-grade scene for a number of years, and she's played for state teams in the juniors, and she's played the senior level as well. She got the best player in the seniors when she was 19, and she's just unbelievable. She's a good pitcher. She's probably the second or third tier pitcher in the South Australian competition, but she brings a red hot bat. She bats about 400 or 500. She's a very strong batter. She's a strong pitcher. She can win games off her own bat or off her own pitching. She's just a fantastic leader. She leads by how she plays. Fantastic player to watch. And those three girls really deserve their positions. We've got other girls. I'm surprised that young Harris didn't make it. She's made it in the past. She's recently been married, so you know she's changed her name. But she's a magnificent shortstop for West Tynes, and I'm so surprised she didn't make the team.
So three out of 23. Do you know when? I'm not sure. Do you know when they're going to announce the final squad?
Well, obviously,
or final team, I should say.
They won't name it until
just before,
maybe days before, and they'll probably sort of play a lot of the players in different positions just to test them out and see how they go. And they'll be given more than the one chance. They will be.
So they've got 23 games to show what they're capable of. And maybe they might actually make a few more players rather than because of the risk of COVID. Do you think they might keep a few people around just in case? Because you imagine haven't made this team, send home, and then all of a sudden you might need to be there.
I think that under the circumstances, the Olympic Committee will allow them to have emergencies to come in if someone gets sent home with COVID. Because I'm thinking to myself, if you lose 3 or 4 players to COVID and you're down to like 12 players and you get a couple of injuries, you're going to struggle to put a team on the field.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, isn't it?
Just one mention of one of the players, Tamika Whitfield, who's also in the 23-person squad. She comes from Queensland, and her brother, Aaron Whitfield, who came from a softball background, played baseball for Brisbane, did very well for the Brisbane Bandits, came over to the LA Giants, played 2 seasons, sensational centre fielder, won the Helms Award as the best player in the competition 2 years ago, and he won it when he was in Brisbane as well. Went to he's in the Minnesota Twins Major League organisation, and last season, not this year, but last year, he played a couple of major league games. So he's made his major league debut.
Fabulous.
And I've interviewed Alan in the past, and the interesting thing about Alan is not only is his sister a champion, his father, John, represented New Zealand in softball, and his mum, who was Nicola Melander, she represented Queensland in Australian softball as well. So, wow, what a family.
It's in the family.
Absolutely.
Well, let's wish our girls best. Let's hope that COVID stays away from them and they have a great preparation and they're in the medal hunt when the Olympics come around.
So ends another Cut on Low Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
I'm Sean Carlin.